live from the mist-enshrouded mountaintop fortress that is X and Y Communications headquarters. You're listening to the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. And now, here's your host, Scott McKay.
All right, here we are again with another big episode of the world-famous Mountaintop Podcast. Today, we're going to talk about something that you guys have been bugging me for a long time to get to, and I needed to get the right female co-host to make sure we cover this thing, and not only just merely covered it, but threw a blanket over it, then hit it with a big heavy sledgehammer. And that's what we're going to do today. With me today, all the way from chilly Canada this time of year, she's in Ontario, is my longtime friend from Simply Success, Iris Benrubi. Iris, how's it going? You staying warm over there?
Trying to, definitely indoors. And thank you so much for having me on. I am thrilled to be here.
Well, we're thrilled to have you. And I say that almost every time, but you know why that is?
Tell me.
Because I only get thrilling guests who I'm happy with.
That's great. And it's nice to be on the other side this time.
Yeah, you know, that's right. You've interviewed me for your summits, especially for women, probably, I don't know, three or four times.
Yeah, several times.
And it's always a great discussion. Getting to the point here, we're going to have a lot of fun with this. Hopefully it doesn't get dragged down into something purely negative, because I think there's a lot of humor to be found in this particular discussion. And that's this. And I can already hear guys cringing before I even part my lips and say these words. How come I can never do anything right? How many of us as guys, how many of us as women, Iris? I mean, I've heard this from both genders. It's no matter what I do with this person who I call my boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, wife, I can't do anything right. I mean, everything's always wrong. It's never good enough, or I messed up, or I just start an argument, or things degenerate into mayhem. That's what we're going to talk about today. And I know you have some very specific ideas on that. I want to start with this, Iris. Where does this all start? How do we end up paired up with people who we start thinking this about? Like, I can never do anything right. If I can't do anything right, why am I with this person to begin with?
Yeah, that's a great question, because it's those things that has us fall in love with that person are the things that make us crazier later. So this all starts from childhood, and we are what I call, we're all adults, or all little children walking in adult bodies. So we've had certain experiences that we've had as children, whether we had a parent dismiss us, smother us, not listen to us, not be emotionally available. And when our partner does that to us, whether it's boyfriend, girlfriend, husband, or wife, that's a wound that gets re-triggered. And so it sounds weird. Like, why would we pick someone who triggers the stuff from childhood? But it's not because we're masochistic. It's because we're trying to heal that thing that we didn't get from mommy or daddy.
Could it be that that's what we're used to and we see it as normal?
Absolutely. That's one thing. It is normal. So if you didn't have a loving mother, then you might pick a woman who's not so loving, but yet that's your wound from your mother, that you never got the love that you felt you deserved or wanted. It gets recreated because you pick that same pattern. And if you're in a conscious relationship, you can heal that. In an unconscious relationship, the wounds just keep getting triggered in both of you.
Now, one of the things that I thought of when you were describing how this happens is something I know a lot of the guys I work with have experienced when they grew up. They were so smart, so talented, so sharp that their parents, and indeed the entire extended family, grandparents, aunts, uncles, even possibly older or younger siblings, are saying, well, we always expect you to be excellent. Of course you got straight A's. Of course you won that contest. Of course you wrote this incredible essay. But when a B+ comes home or second place happens, there's disappointment. And that's really hard for kids to wrap their head around, because in that context, Iris, the danger is the kid never gets any approval. The kid only feels the heat when they're less than perfect. And that creates pretty major psychological problems in relationships down the road, doesn't it?
Absolutely. And often it comes from a good place. Our parents want to motivate us to be the best that we can be, but their strategy just takes away from that need. You know, the number one thing we need after a home, clothing, and shelter is that we need to be loved. We need connection and belonging. And when our parents don't give us that praise, That's the wound that we walk around with. And if you're part of a couple and you do something for your wife, or you take out the trash and she doesn't acknowledge you, or she complains about something else you haven't done, there goes that wound again. It's like pressing a button. That's where it gets triggered again. It's like a button that gets pushed. And that old wound that you have from childhood, from your mom or your dad, gets triggered in your relationships. And that's why men and women both feel like no matter what I do, it's not good enough, because we trigger each other. We trigger each other's wounds from childhood.
So a part of this, I believe strongly, is that if you haven't gotten the approval and you've only been kind of slapped when it wasn't perfect, that's one factor that may cause you to be an approval-seeking person, which of course drives people away because it comes off as the dreaded neediness and clinginess, right?
And it's absolutely exhausting, because no matter how much approval you get, it's like a gas tank with a hole in the bottom. No matter how much gas you put in there, at some point it always empties, so it needs to be refilled again.
Wow, and don't light a match either.
But it is like fire, which is why we get so triggered in relationships.
Now, I think this is interesting to think about from two different perspectives. First being our own perspective. Hey, is this something I can relate to? Is this something I'm bringing into a relationship? And that may cause us to think, hey, look, I can never do anything right, even though my partner or my spouse may be perfectly okay with what I'm doing. I may be projecting that onto the other person by thinking, okay, look, you know what? I know I messed up. That wasn't perfect. I can do better. And it's kind of self-imposed that we think that we're not doing anything right. But see, the other side of the coin is if that person is bringing something into the relationship that says, okay, nothing is ever good enough for me, it has to be better, they have that perfectionist tendency, and or they lack trust in their partner such that, you know, if something's even the slightest bit awry here, I'm going to react to it. What happens when we find ourselves in a relationship and we feel like legitimately, hey, you know, we're doing some things right here, but the other person isn't acknowledging it? What's going on there? What caused that, and how can we fix it?
So I've got about a million thoughts going out right now. So the first one I'm going to start with, we all project. There is no such thing as somebody who doesn't project, unless maybe you're the Dalai Lama. However, even if you're doing things perfectly according to you, it might still trigger her childhood stuff. So, you know, when I work with couples, it's never really what they're fighting about. It's what's underneath that. Couples fight about money, sex, and children. And whenever they fight about that, it's really not about the money, sex, and the children. It's really the emotional stuff underneath that. So it's often they don't feel heard or they feel dismissed. And I'm talking about men and women. You know, I think that, you know, with your show, a lot of men are feeling like they're always the ones to blame. But we are each in a relationship 100% responsible. Because if I'm 50% responsible and my partner is 50% responsible, we're always gauging each other to see who did enough. And should I do mine because he did his? But when we're 100% responsible, we look at, what did I do? Did I respond in a way that's authentic, empathetic, understanding? And if I did, then what else is going on underneath that? And it could be this, you know, if I'm talking about to the men that are listening to this, if it's your woman who grew up with a father who always made her do everything perfectly, and that's the paradigm that she's grown up with and she's imposing on you, you get to talk about what goes on for her when you don't fill in the blank, when you don't respond to her, when you don't take out the trash, when you don't call the insurance company like you promised. I guarantee that underneath that is some anxiety for her that gets triggered when you do or don't do something. So you get to talk about the anxiety rather than the action or lack of action.
Now, the first thing you mentioned there was the Dalai Lama. The Dalai Lama, now this is an innocent question, okay? And I guess it's a little tangential at this point, but I just can't hold it back because I've always wanted to ask this question. The Dalai Lama is the representation of the perfect human being on earth. Mm. Why then does he have to wear glasses?
Good question. I'm not sure I have the answer.
I know I don't. That's the first thing I've always thought whenever I see this guy. He seems like a really nice guy and seems genuine, but If he's perfect, what's up with the glasses?
I guess we're all mere mortals.
Yeah, I suppose. So anyway, you were also talking about how guys tend to believe, look, I can't do anything right. After all, I'm the guy and men are to blame for everything. It's always the guy's fault, you know. So I'm glad you mentioned that and threw it out on the table. And I love what you said that reaffirmed that, hey, you know what? When we're in a relationship, it is two people. We're both equally responsible for this relationship going well. And one of the things I've always talked about, Iris, is the importance of people being generous and optimistic. In other words, I have to be a giver and the other person has to be a giver. One of us can't just be siphoning from the other and expecting more because it wasn't good enough. Because then when someone on the other side is optimistic and generous, they can fall prey to that kind of manipulation in that one-sided relationship, of course. The other thing, of course, being that optimism. I expect this other person has my best interests at heart. I don't think they're out to get me. I think they want this relationship to work. The third thing being, you know, we're coming from a similar wavelength. If I believe you're expecting too much from me, I should be able to at least say, hey, you know, I did my best here. How, you know, can that be good enough sometimes? And maybe that might catch the other person's attention. But, you know, let's say it doesn't. Let's say the person says, oh, no, you're the one who's at fault here. I'm doing everything right. I'm doing my darndest. And you're just not keeping up your end of the bargain. How do we know whether to take that to heart and personalize it or whether we come back and challenge it?
I think at some level, we all know if we're holding up our end of the bargain or getting away with stuff. So it's really about being honest with ourselves. If we have been honest with ourselves and we have done enough, it's really to ask more questions. Because what happens when couples get into conflict, they blame each other. Mm. They put out statements that are fact. No, you didn't say that. You said this. No, I didn't say that. I remember I said that. And the truth is none of you remember it exactly correctly because when we have so much emotion, our brain just doesn't register things correctly. So when we're able to say, the way I remember it is, this is what happened. Or, you know, I'm really curious. I really did my best for you and I see that you're still upset. What's going on for you? From a place of curiosity rather than right and wrong. Couples fight from a win-lose paradigm. If you win, then I lose. If in order for me to win, you must lose. But if you start to look at things from curiosity and see what's underneath that, so you might want to start to think like an archaeologist and start to dig and see what's underneath the superficial layer. Because when we fight, it's never about the things that we're fighting about. There are other things underneath that. So either we feel hurt or we're afraid. That's what fights are about. That's what anger is about. When we pull back the anger, underneath that, there's either fear or pain. And when you can come from a very quiet place and just be curious, be in the inquiry, ask questions, what's going on for you? How did that make you feel? How could I have done this differently? How would you like to do it differently in the future? It has the other person feel like, okay, you're listening. You're asking for what I want. You don't need to take on anything of what the woman says. If she says, well, I think you should X, Y, and Z, you can just say, okay, I hear that you think I should do X, Y, and Z. And what would that be like for you? So what you're actually trying to do is to get her to move out of her anger and really connect for what's underneath that, which is, like I said earlier, it's either fear or it's hurt.
You know, Iris, isn't it interesting how so many people think that when they're in a relationship with someone else, there's this adversarial relationship between men and women by design. Like, that's just the way it's supposed to be. But I don't agree with that. I don't think necessarily we have to be pitting ourselves against the man or woman we're in a relationship with. We should be kind of on each other's team. We should be for each other instead of trying to figure out how to get the best of the other one. But it's amazing how many people think like that, isn't it?
Well, it's unfortunate because many of us have grown up in homes where it is adversarial. We see movies like War of the Roses, you know, so it actually teaches us that these gender differences are almost irreconcilable, if that's the right word in English. It's, you know, we listen to rebuttal instead of listening to our partner. And I can tell you the number one skill is if you listen to your partner, even if you don't agree with her, then she's going to feel heard and she's going to put down some of her weapons.
Yeah, I think that's fair. Two things also came to mind when you were talking about how men and women tend to interact when they're angry with each other. First of all, it's really immature not to want to listen to the other person, but instead to have this quest to be right all the time. That seems like something that as you become a wiser human being with more skill in the life that you live, that you have less of a need to do that. Plus, the other thing that comes to mind is a lot more pragmatic than even that, Iris. It's just, hey, you know what? Settle down and let the emotions cool off before you start digging in like that, you know?
Absolutely. And I agree with you. It is immature to do the he said, she said, and to be in it to win. However, those are the skills that we grew up with in our families. And that's why this show like yours is so important, for the listeners to get new skills so that they can get wiser and do something different that's going to diffuse the argument and be able to lead to an agreement, a compromise, something that will be a win-win instead of a win-lose.
Yeah, you know, a recurring theme here is, hey, my childhood is being brought into this adult relationship. Yet you seem to be saying, you know, you're not necessarily doomed to this. How do I sort out what the pieces are that I'm bringing from my childhood compared to the good, healthy things that I'm replacing them with? Because our brains can play tricks on us in these scenarios, right, Iris?
Totally, because we can justify in our head for and against something in 10 seconds. So what we need to look at is, am I getting triggered? If I'm getting triggered, it's my childhood stuff. If my partner is getting triggered, chances are it's her childhood stuff. And so if we can stay, and I'm talking to the men, if you can stay calm, listen to what's going on for her, not as a reflection of you and you did something wrong again, and don't personalize it, you're able to grow out of that old paradigm, the old, you know, role model that you got from your parents to do something different. But if you're getting upset, that's your stuff. She can't make you angry. You get angry in response to what she said or what she did. So when we're responsible for our emotions, that's what gives us the access to do something different.
Now, when you say triggers, does that rhyme with hot buttons?
Oh, totally. Reactive, upset, anger, any of those.
So if you're with a woman and she just knows how to trigger those hot buttons, she knows exactly where to go to get you to explode and spout off and get that rise out of you that she's trying to get. Are you saying that's all on us, how we react, or does she not have some level of responsibility because she's trying to trigger it? I mean, you know, this goes back to it takes two to tango, right? Those situations are so common in dysfunctional relationships. What do you have to say about those situations in general? Give me everything you can on those, because I think every guy can relate.
So first of all, even in functional relationships, we are all masters at triggering our partners. Just when we know our partners so well, we know that thing that's going to set them off the edge. However, like I said earlier, we are each 100% responsible. If she's the one that's pushing you to the edge, she's 100% responsible for her behavior. Your response to what she does is your responsibility. So if there's a trigger there, forget it, whether she pushes you to the edge or whether it was a colleague or a boss or the guy behind the coffee counter, that trigger is yours. And that's the part that you need to heal and evolve so that if you weren't so easily triggerable, what would life be like? What if people could try to press your buttons and you had no reaction other than, oh, I'm so sorry you feel that way, and you could have inner peace in your life? So you're responsible for your reactions to what other people do. They're fully responsible for their actions.
You know, if you're a kid and you're getting picked on and bullied in school, the best advice your parents can give you is don't let them make you upset and make you lose your cool, because that's what the bully's trying to do, is get you to just lose it all over the place, because it's hilarious, because it gives them a sense of power over you.
The piece that I want to add to this is that we can suppress our responses or we can heal the wounds. So you can suppress it for a while, it's going to explode someplace else. And at school, I mean, you have no power at school, so you suppress it so the bully doesn't get a kick out of it. But in a romantic relationship, you don't want to be suppressing your wounds. You want to be able to heal your stuff, and you want to be able to have a conversation where you can be heard so that she knows what you need and where she needs to tread lightly. You're both responsible to giving each other that so that you can have a healthy relationship.
Okay, Iris, that sounds a little bit like it might be easier said than done. How do I connect the dots between this hot button and where that wound is? How do I know what wound is causing me to lose it when this hot button is pressed? Is there an exercise there?
Yeah, it's actually pretty easy. Just think of the youngest time when you felt this way.
I was probably still crapping diapers when I was listening.
But you probably don't remember that. But you'll remember in grade one when you put your hand up to answer a question and you answered the wrong question and everyone laughed and you felt embarrassed, right? Or you went to your dad to ask for, you know, a quarter to go to the store and he said, well, who do you think you are? Do you think we're made out of money? And you felt ashamed, rejected, dismissed. So the stuff that happens to us in adulthood that triggers us are just repetitions of what happened to us in childhood. So if you have a trigger, your wife says, I can never count on you. And you're so hurt. You get angry. You want to lash out at her. If you can stop yourself from lashing out, take some time, remove yourself until you've calmed down and remind yourself of when was the youngest age that you felt that way, where someone dismissed you. Someone told you you didn't measure up. Someone told you you weren't good enough. And you'll find something between the ages, probably between 4 and 8. And that's the original wound that's still getting triggered in adulthood.
So how can we heal it? What do we turn it into?
Yeah, you actually need to do some work with either a coach or a therapist where you get that as a child, you had to interpret things. Like if your mom said, Scott, you had to figure out, am I in trouble or is she excited to see me? So as a child, we have no power. So we're always interpreting things. As adults, we're still interpreting things, but we have so much more power in our life. When we're children and our dad dismisses us, then that bond to connection to our dad gets cut. And that's hurtful. But as an adult, we have so many other ways of getting love and connection. And so what our spouse does to us or our girlfriend does to us doesn't have to trigger the same way because we have many more abilities and many more skills as an adult, but we just don't realize it.
Now, what I like to say is if you start seeing patterns in your relationships, you need to look in the mirror. So if we're again and again getting the same girlfriend into our lives, you know, it's like different person, same girlfriend. I'm having the same relationship again and again with different people. The same hot buttons are being triggered. I can never do anything right in the same exact ways. How do I get myself healed so that I break that cycle?
And it's really about looking at, is there a pattern? It can be between girlfriends, but it can also be from your girlfriend, your coworker, your boss. They're all repeating the same message. You're always late. I can't count on you. You never finish something that you start. Then you want to start to look at, that's wounding, but underneath that, you want to look at, is there some truth to this pattern? And if there is, my family's joke was all the time that I could never be on time. And I really couldn't. I was always trying to do one more thing and I'd always get everywhere late. And when I heard that as a pattern, it's like, okay, this is really something that I need to look at to start to shift. As an adult, you can change so many things in your life. So if you have some patterns, you want to look at what am I responsible for? What am I creating? Or what am I attracting into my life? Because I still have some unresolved stuff from childhood that I'm recreating in an attempt to heal it.
So how do we know for sure when we've broken this cycle and we're in a relationship where, hey, you know what? We're not blame each other for everything, and we're starting to actually do things right for each other. I guess what I'm trying to ask is, what are the first signs that I'm starting to break this cycle in the context of relationship and it's starting to go right? Is it reasonable to expect that we're never going to start blaming each other, or we can't do any wrong? Or where does the Pollyanna-ish expectation turn into what actually a healthy, functional relationship looks like? Because it's never going to be perfect, is it?
I don't believe that we ever get to a place where we don't get triggered at all. It's just that the triggers get less frequent and they're not as intense. So when we get triggered, we want to look at, all right, what is mine here and what is the other person's? Is this my being overly sensitive? Is this something that happened in my childhood as a way to recognize what we're bringing forward into relationship? And you said it earlier, when we start to create relationships where we're both responsible for ourselves, where we're really curious to find out what's going on in the other person, there will be blame sometimes, but when we can come back and apologize and take responsibility for our part, that's when we know we're creating a conscious relationship.
Yeah, I think that's a brilliant concept that you just threw on the table, and I don't want it to just be glossed over. The whole apology issue. Some people are too proud to give an apology ever, and that's not good. And some people apologize for breathing oxygen because they lack self-esteem, which isn't any good. But I think if a couple can, with some humility, know when they've done wrong and offer up, hey, you know what? It's okay that I did wrong. I mean, it may not be okay that I did wrong, but I'm going to apologize and I'm going to make it right if I need to. And they can take kind of the pride issue away from feeling like they have to one-up the other person and really feel like they're on the same team, kind of like a good basketball or football team does. If someone drops the ball, he says to his teammates, hey, you know what, guys, that's on me. You know, I'm going to follow the ball into my hands next time. It won't happen again. You know, he doesn't blame the quarterback for throwing an errant pass. That's when you have a team that falls apart, and usually it's a coaching issue, but that team isn't going to win a championship. So I think when couples start seeing themselves as on the same team, and if something happened that was wrong, it's up to me to make it right. It's up to the other person to accept my offer to make it right and thank me for doing it and let me know when it's made right, instead of continuing the blame pattern and say, hey, yeah, you know what? See, you are a terrible person and you just admitted it. It's more about being on the same team instead of being adversaries. That's what it really comes down to. And like you said, you have to understand where those hot buttons are coming from in your past and break that pattern and, frankly, mature and grow out of it. And I think that's something that so many people underestimate the power of. They underestimate their own power to grow up and out of that. And I guess the first step overall, above and beyond all of it, is to realize exactly what's going on there. And I think you've done a wonderful job of illuminating that, Iris, and I thank you for that.
Thank you. I'd like to add a couple things here.
Sure.
In that what we know with healthy relationships, the sooner you repair a conflict, the healthier the relationship. So it's like, you know, if you cut yourself, but you never put a Band-Aid on it and you never put polysporin or anything on it to heal, it'll probably end up in a scar. And so when we don't repair quickly, we have a lot of scars in relationships. And the other thing I wanted to add, you can even apologize for things that you actually didn't mean to do. So you may have said something to her where she got hurt, and you can say, sweetie, I am so sorry those words hurt you. Because really, you are sorry she got hurt. It's not about you taking responsibility for something you did on purpose, but simply being empathetic enough for her that she got hurt.
You know, we talk about political correctness sometimes on this show, where the shift has happened where it's not the intent of the speaker, it's how the other person took it. And if the other person is offended, well, then the blame is projected back onto the original person who said what was offensive, whether that person meant it or not. I think having an attitude like that is absolutely toxic to a relationship. If we can all take responsibility, not only for how we take things, but for how we speak things, and have that balance like you just spoke of, I think that's a wonderful thing, and I think that portends having a great relationship. Mutual responsibility.
Yeah, and I was going to add to know that you can create that.
Yeah, absolutely. Guys, I want you to get to know Iris a little better. She has a very special offer for you where you can call her on the phone and talk to her for 20 minutes over phone or Skype, because she's in Canada, I'm sure. And I've set up a special URL so that you can talk to her if you feel like this is an issue that really has impacted you, or you want to talk to someone who kind of straddles that world between therapist and coach. Go ahead and go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/Iris, just like the colored part of your eye, I-R-I-S, and talk to Iris. She's what you see is what you get. She's a very nice lady, and she's extremely smart, like you just figured out. Iris, thank you once again for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me on. My pleasure.
And guys, if you want to get coaching for every other part of your life, being a great man, getting the woman of your dreams, getting ahead in your career, remember, you can go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/coaching and find out about what I and my team of wonderful coaches can do for you. And we're in the happiness business around here, gentlemen. And if you want to enjoy your life more and live life more to the fullest, go to www.mountaintoppodcast.com/coaching and get in touch with us. Until I talk to you again on the next big show, this is Scott McKay from X and Y Communications. Be good out there.
The Mountaintop Podcast is copyright 2016 by X and Y Communications. All rights reserved worldwide. Be sure to visit www.mountaintoppodcast.com for show notes. And while you're there, sign up for the X and Y Communications newsletter. This is Ed Roy Odom speaking for the Mountaintop Podcast.